We're here to interview Phil Weinstein, who is the director of a whole bunch of animated films, including Balto 2 and Balto 3, The Lion King 2, Hop, and many others. First of all, Phil, welcome to SourceCast. It's a privilege for us to have you here.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, our very first question is one of the most asked questions in the that a bunch of Balto fans have wanted to know. First of all, the six pups in Wolf Quest, of those, only four actually had names, those being Alu, Cody, Dingo, and Saba, or Saba, or however it's pronounced. We were wondering, even if it was just inside the production team, did the other two pups actually have names?
Oh, boy. That's a tough question. I would have to go and find the original script. And I'm sure I have it in my garage, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But after we're done, I promise you I'll go look and see if there's anything in the script.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's going back away, so some of the stuff I just don't remember. But I do have my original script that I made notes on and stuff from way back then, and I can look.
Okay. Second question. Was it ever discussed among the production team what became of Balto's father?
Let me think about that. I don't think so. Mainly because we were just following the theatrical original. So that template was already set up. So we just sort of went from there.
I gotcha. So it was more just following the leader sort of thing. And nobody really talked about it because it wasn't needed.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the story stuff, especially with Balto 2, the way they worked at Universal, the script was written. And then I was brought on board. So whatever was happening story-wise in the development pretty well happened before I came along board. Of course, I had a chance to make notes of things, but in terms of generating the script, there was a final script that was generated before I came onto the show.
So,
you know, whether they had conversations about who Balto's father was or any other things, you know, and there were other directors in consideration that were making various notes and before I came along. So I'm not sure where, you know, the back and forth with that. I'm just really sure where that was. You know, that's a conversation probably for the writer, really.
Okay.
Makes perfect sense.
Well, even though there is no official Balto 4 planned, what do you think of the fan projects that are coming along? And on the same topic, if there were a Balto 4, what would you want it to be about?
I haven't really followed the fan projects. Every once in a while, I check into your site and I just kind of look and see what's going on. I know there's tons of interest in it.
Yeah.
Because I get emails from people around the world all the time about it. And I'm not at Universal Studios, but I do occasionally talk to them and say, how about it? And how about another one? And so, you know, nothing's really happened officially. You know, I think I told you that over emails and stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to do another one. I don't think you know, for me, career-wise, that was probably one of my favorite projects to work on were the Balto sequels. I'm really eager to do it, but they haven't talked about doing it. And what would I like to see? I kind of steal from the original, so I really wanted to sort of do something with him. And I thought that Alu was a great character, and I'd love to see her come back and help her father in some way. And maybe there's even some kind of weird, you know, revenge thing with Steel, and Alu comes back to save her dad or something along those lines. I mean, that's just personally what I'd like to see. Whether I get to do that is another story, but, you know, and I'd love to tie up all the loose ends, especially between the first two stories.
That'd be really neat to see.
Yeah, definitely.
Contains people who are working on projects.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's just it's one of those movies that you know, I've worked on a lot of different things, you know, but that's the one that I get the most questions about for the Balto movies. And I'm sure Simon Wells, the guy who directed the original, must also get for whatever reason it it sort of it worked on a lot of levels for a lot of people. I'm not exactly sure why, but it did, even the video sequels. And so people still ask. It's been a long time, right? It's been 10 years? Has it been that long? 9 years since the third one was released?
That almost sounds about right.
Yeah.
I'd have to check for sure.
as far as I remember, Wolf Quest was released in 02 and Wings of Change in 04. I might be wrong, but that's what I remember.
Okay.
So it's not quite as long, but I was thinking about when I came on board and started working on it, which would have been, I think, in 2000. That's probably when I started. But they're 18-month productions and it's released, so that would make sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty. Well, in regards to The Lion King 2, how involved were you as far as a production of the movie and, I guess, story-wise?
Lion King 2, I was a storyboard artist, and they went through a series of directors that were hired and fired on The Lion King 2. And the very first directing, producing team that was on board, I wasn't the director, I was part of the very original development group that was on that. So I was developing characters and, you know, we were working on story scenarios. And then they fired that director and writer team. And I stayed at Disney and I moved on to some other video projects. And then I think a couple years later, I came back to the project as a storyboard artist. And at the time, I was storyboarding a lot of songs. So I helped storyboard a lot of the songs in that movie. I can't remember all of them, but that's most of those direct videos back then. I usually did one or two songs in pretty much all of them from the Aladdin sequels on forward, even Lion King 2.
Okay.
And that, by the way, that's how I ended up doing, I worked on the South Park movie, the South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. I don't know if you guys ever saw that, but that was because I was storyboarding, musical numbers for a lot of the direct videos at Disney, almost all of them back in that time. And one of the producers left go be a producer on the South Park movie, and that's how I ended up working on the South Park movie. They wanted someone to storyboard the musical numbers in that movie, so that's how I ended up working on the film.
Oh, the musical numbers in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, much I laughed.
Yeah, so I built most of those songs. I didn't do Blame Canada, but I did work on pretty much all the others, the opening number, and so they were pretty crazy songs, but yeah.
Okay. Were there any plot points or characters that you ended up scrapping from the final product for one reason or another?
Yeah, I honestly don't remember, but remember I was a storyboard artist on Lion King 2, so really the people that would be making those creative decisions would have been the writer and the producer and the director on that project. And, you know, we, as a storyboard artist, generally you're given, you know, they hand out a sort of a sequence and you storyboard it out. And sometimes things are thrown away later just to try to improve story, but I don't really remember more specifically. It's definitely a writer-director question for that one.
Right. How about we broaden that question out to some of the other projects that you've done where you did take direct position. Do you remember any sort of characters that you ended up having to scrap for any other projects?
Any of the ones that I directed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh. No, I don't think I don't remember throwing out any characters. Sometimes we expanded roles or diminished roles for characters in some of the stories. You know, like for example, like I think I mentioned before that Cody in Balto 3 did, in the original script, did not go out to help rescue his father. Didn't save his dad.
Yeah.
And that's something we added later, because it just seemed like, wow, it seemed like something you obviously would go do. You would be the hero at the end.
Yeah, I know if it were my dad, you know, out there lost, I'd be one of the first people running out after.
Yeah, no matter what, no matter what your beef was, and then they had a little beef with each other, but yeah. You would, you know, family.
What made you want to become involved in animated films in the first place?
Well, I like storytelling. I don't know that I was such a big fan of animation in the beginning. I don't think I was. I mean, I didn't watch cartoons when I was a kid growing up, and I didn't really do too much of that either, even in college or anything. But I like to draw, and when I learned about storyboarding, you know, you're kind of a director in a way in animation when you're storyboarding, because you're sort of placing where the camera's going to be and what the characters are going to do, how they're going to act, and I like that a lot. And so in that way, you can sort of be your own little storyteller. So that to me was really appealing. And then being able to step up to the next level and go from a storyboard artist to a director is great, because you're dealing with color and design and voice actors, and so even that much further. So it's a really interesting process. It's really, even today, after all these years, it's still pretty fascinating to see it. That it actually all comes together in one way, for better or for worse, it all comes together at the end.
And I bet it's a heck of a fun job, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a fun job. It really is.
Alrighty. Well, we were wondering what you would consider to be your greatest achievement in the animation business.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know. Great achievements. I've just been really very lucky and happy to continue to work and get some good projects. You know, and some are okay, some are not great, some are great. Really, the Balta ones was probably my favorite to work on, just because I like those stories a lot. And I just had a lot of fun with those characters. Especially with what I've been doing career-wise, I mean, primarily I've done direct-to-videos or TV shows, and you're always it's a very restrictive time frame and restrictive budget, and there's a particular way of putting these shows together, so you don't have 5 years to carve out a story. You have, you know, 18 months beginning to end, you know, from when you start to finish on a direct-to-video. So it's interesting to work under that kind of time constraint. So sometimes it works. I mean, you guys know, if you're sitting around telling stories with your friends, that sometimes it works right out. Something, the idea comes out and it's perfect. And other times it's not perfect, and it takes a little working over to make it better.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing the stuff that I've done all these years, you don't have that luxury of time. So it's interesting when you're kind of working under the gun to try. Everybody wants to make it as great as they can, and sometimes you don't have the time to do it. And I, in a way, kind of like the pressure of saying, wow, this is it. It's got to go. It's got to be animated at this point. Is it working? Is it not working? Can we fix something later? You know? So it's kind of fun. It's a little bit different. I mean, all these, if you've ever seen behind the scenes storyboards or animatics from big budget, like maybe Pixar movies or Disney movies, and you'd say sometimes they'll show you those early storyboards or animatics. And, you know, oftentimes they're kind of clunky and nothing doesn't quite work right, you know.
Yeah.
And they all sort of start the same way, but the difference is they have a little more time to try to get it right and work it out. Now, that's the main difference between the low budget and the high budget stuff. But it all sort of starts really in the same place, and oftentimes the same talent, you know, the same storyboard, same character designers. It's very interesting.
Well, cool. And on a similar note, you've won an Emmy and you've been nominated for another. How does it feel to have such an accomplishment under your belt?
Oh, it's cool. Yeah. It's fun. I mean, it was great. It was a thrill to win one, and it was really cool to get the nomination for Hellboy a couple of years ago. And it's really always an honor to be part of that, and it's always a team effort. The show that I'm working on now just got nominated for a Daytime Emmy. Really happy about that, too, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a couple episodes of that early in the morning.
Yeah, it's a preschool show.
Yeah, when I've been getting ready for stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's very, very cool. And going to the award show is, I remember, you know, even though it was, for me, 1997, I went in. It just doesn't seem very real, but it's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are you familiar with Kopa, the original son of Simba and Nala? And if so, was there a reason you all opted not to put him in The Lion King 2?
No, what's his name?
Apparently his name was Kopa, and it was, I forget exactly where the fan knowledge comes from, because I'm not...
I can answer that. Kopa was the son of Simba and Nala in a series of books that were published like immediately after The Lion King. And there were 6 books total, all of them 100-page kids' books, but they all had Kopa in them. So.
Wow. No, I wasn't aware of that. That's neat.
Yeah. A bunch of people have been wondering why there's Kiara instead of Kopa in The Lion King 2. And guess not even you know the answer to that, so.
No, I mean, you're going to have to track down, gosh, I can't remember who was the, was Daryl Rooney the director of Lion King 2, is that right?
Yeah.
I think he was the one that ended up taking it to the finish line.
Okay. We'll definitely have to.
You have to find him or the writers and ask them. They might know.
Okay. We'll definitely have to track him down and ask that question eventually.
Let's see. Next, on to the next question. Are there any future movies that you are working on currently that you can discuss with us?
Say feature movies?
Future.
I've been developing my own project for a long time now, so I'm not really ready to talk about it yet, but it's a feature film.
Okay.
Alrighty.
That's pretty neat.
Hopefully I'll,
Cool.
Here, which Balto sequel did you enjoy working on the most?
I liked them both for different reasons. I liked the story of Balto too a lot. I remember reading the script and just, I liked the ending when Alu left and said goodbye to her father. It just kind of gave me a chill. I remember when I first read it in the script and I thought, wow, that just works already. And I liked the story of Balto 3 too. And I love that I had a little more experience doing Balto 3, so I had a better feel for what we could get away with in animation to kind of try to make it look better or work better. So, but both of them for different reasons. They were both pretty good stories, I thought.
It sure did seem like they were, the production behind them seemed, the production atmosphere behind the two movies did seem a little, to be different just based on how they were created and how the animated scenes ended up being between, Wolf Quest and Wings of Chains, particularly with the more 3D approach to the scenery in Wolf Quest. It's just that sort of the way that they were animated seemed to portray that they had different production styles.
Yeah, well, it's right. That's true. And especially the dream sequence was was done completely by an independent animator, not by the main team.
Wow.
But, you're right, it's hard.
The things you learn when you interview people.
Alrighty, well, on to something completely different. How was it working on Hop, since it's a mix between CGI and live action, and as such, sort of out of the norm?
Well, I was in the visual effects unit for that movie, and... My supervisor was a visual effects supervisor. What our unit primarily did was storyboard. So we storyboarded the entire movie. So mainly focused on scenes where EB or any digital characters were interacting. But I'm pretty sure we storyboarded the whole thing front to back. And what, the storyboarding process was almost exactly the same. You were definitely pitching ideas and kind of working out where the camera's going to go and how they're going to act. It really isn't any different than what I would normally do for a storyboard kind of job. But the main difference was when they were filming the movie, we were on set pretty much every day, or some representative of the team was always on set there with pen and paper. So if the director was setting the camera up to do whatever shot. And something, he's looking at the storyboard and he goes, well, you know, you guys drew this kitchen scene, for example, and now we're in the real kitchen and you can't really put a camera here. Well, now what do you do? So you would come back to the storyboard team and you'd sort of try to sketch out a better way to present that scene.
Okay.
So that's what was different. We were pretty much on set during the entire shoot. And that was mainly it. But other than that, it's a very similar process.
Okay, sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, especially when you're on location and there's no, it's not like you have a drafting table or someplace special. You really just kind of, you find a rock somewhere and you pull out your sketch pad and post-its and a Sharpie and you know, wherever you are, you just sort of make it work.
Well, someone wanted to know if you like cheese pies.
someone who emailed us from to our mailbag.
Question. I was looking. I don't even know what a cheese pie is.
We don't either.
Yeah, not a clue.
We really don't either. Somebody posted that on our board, and we went, well, alrighty then.
So somebody on your group wrote. They were asking. They said questions. To ask. And by the way, I don't mind. You can ask me questions. People that say they thought the movie sucked or whatever. That's fine. I don't, you know, you can ask wherever you like. But somebody asked about, so that I had a roommate in college that was related to Sean Astin.
Oh, yes. That one.
And asked about that. And I was curious, how did they know that? That's amazing.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I saw that when I went, huh? Creepy people on the internet. there's no telling where people find out those kind of things.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you that's true.
Awesome.
And honestly, I don't remember if I even consciously remember. Remember, I was in college. It was 82 to 86, and it wasn't my the way the rooms were set up. I think I was a sophomore. You had you had a room and a roommate and another room and a roommate and you shared a bathroom. So I'm pretty sure the person that they're thinking of was like, he was like a suite mate. We were in a suite and he was like in the room on the other side of the shared sort of bathroom area.
Oh yeah, I gotcha. We have that same system where I went to college. I just graduated yesterday. So, had that same sort of system.
Right. So I read that post and it reminded me that that's true. This one roommate was related to Sean Astin and I honestly don't remember if I was even consciously aware of that at the time that I was making Balto 3. And because I don't remember, I was like, wow, that's, but I certainly would have mentioned it to Sean when we were working together if I remember. I was trying to figure out how that person on the internet knew, because I sure hadn't remembered that until they mentioned it.
That is incredible.
I mean, maybe I remember. I mean, it's possible that I remembered at the time that there was a little connection. But no, and their question was, did that influence a casting decision? The answer was definitely no. I mean, the Department of Universal found him, and at the time he was, he was being considered for an Oscar for his work in Lord of the Rings, and I just thought, wow, I honestly thought he's out of our league. Nobody, he's not going to do this. And I was surprised when he accepted the offer, so that was a thrill to work with him.
I know a couple of people around the site who are kind of interested in somehow getting involved in voice acting. And I was wondering if you had any advice to give to those people who might be interested, like how to get started or what to do.
Oh, gosh. I'm not really sure. I mean, the voice talent and the people that we get when you're up for a job, it comes from generally from a voice director. So, the best thing you could probably do is try some of these people like Susan Blupka. She used to teach classes out here. Now, it's been a while, so you might want to check and make sure she still does that. But she's one of the more well-known voice directors out here. And the thing is, you sort of have to get on a voice director's radar. Because
okay.
uh, That's how directors would become, or other cast or other writers would become aware of you, because we will call a casting director, a voice director, and say we need a certain part, and then they'll send over, you know, email over here, you know, a dozen possibilities. So they're the gatekeeper is almost the casting director or the voice director for audio. That's where you know. And I think, you know, everybody has a different idea of what they'd like for voices. But, you know, me personally, I like more natural sounding voices, maybe like the way they are at Pixar. Voices feel forced or cartoony pushed.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at like someone like Patton Oswalt who did Remy and Ratatouille.
Yeah.
She pretty much just sounds like that in real life. So, somehow for me personally, I prefer that. It just feels more real. And,
I think so too.
Yeah. Yeah. Lacey Chabert, who did Lou. I mean, that's pretty much what she sounds like. You know, but she is a nice quality to it. She didn't try to put on something to pull it off. But anyways.
Yeah. She has been cast for a whole lot of childlike roles. So I guess, I personally kind of assumed that's how her voice sounded.
Right.
So. If you could go back and redo any movie you made, which would it be and why?
Okay, can I read it? Well, yeah, you know, they're hugely collaborative efforts. Anyone, any of them, whether I'm directing or storyboarding or whatever your job is, it's very collaborative. So it's, you know, you're never really in a position where you can sort of make it exactly what you imagined or envisioned, even when you're working on it. You know, every movie you work on, you have your own idea about the way it should work. And even the writer does, and the director does, and the producer does, and the board storyboard does, and everybody does. And so you get it, everybody sort of contributes in that way. So it's sort of impossible in animation to sort of be some kind of an auteur. So I don't know that I would really go and redo any of them, because it's a futile effort. You know? It's like it's easy to watch a finished product and say, well, that didn't work, or whatever. But sometimes in the execution, you're never really quite sure, or it's a sampling of everybody's ideas. I collectively made it really great or made it really stink. Tell you though, having worked on them, you know, none of us are working on the project thinking, well, we're going to make the suckiest thing we can try to make. You know, just everybody's really, generally, it's a sincere effort to try to make it really great. And then, you know, so it's like 50-50. Sometimes it works and sometimes it really just doesn't work. But nobody's really phoning it in. Everybody's trying to, same effort goes into making a good one as into making a bad one.
But I can understand why you wouldn't
want to
go through the whole to-do of doing it all over again.
I mean, you know, there's like little things all the time. You know, sometimes I look at animation and I go, oh my gosh, why didn't I call that as a retake, or, you know, or why didn't I really push for this storyline to really happen, or hey, maybe, you know, I put Rosie in one little tiny scene in the beginning of, was it Balto 3? Why should I have used her a little bit more, you know, anyways, so that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The little things.
And then I have a question. What are the difference between working on a DTV film and then a TV series?
What are the differences?
Yes.
It's again, it's scaling back the amount of time you have to work on it. So in that tier of how things work, you could start with feature film where you have, you know, generally, on a big budget feature, there's about 5 years total between the beginning of the thing and it going to theaters, and sometimes 3 to 4 of those years are just really kind of working that story out. And then you step down to something like direct video. Well, if you're at a place like Disney, they have a little bit more time, and I haven't worked on one of those in years, but you still may have a couple of years or maybe even 3 years to sort of work it out and make it kind of function. And then the directed videos that I've directed, it's, you know, it's 18 months beginning to end. I mean, that's how it goes. And then you step down to television, and it's much tighter. So we have the writers are given a certain amount of time, whatever it is, to write the script. Maybe it's 3 or 4 weeks, sometimes a lot shorter. Storyboard has 6 weeks, and you have a very finite, you know, you have checking and timing and a certain amount of time for animation, so it's very rigid. It goes out the door, it gets animated, and gets good post-production, and there's no, you know, we're not, oh, we'll just, let's just think about this for 6 months and come back to it. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
So yeah. It's just a time, it's a time issue.
So so for TV series, it's pretty much in, out, and then work on the next thing? Work on the next
well,
episode?
They overlap. So if you're doing a series of, 22 shows, all your shows will be in various stages of production at one time. So they may be at script, they may be at story, you may be calling retakes. So you'll start a script and you hand it out to the designers 1 week, and then a week to 2 weeks later, you're starting the next script. I'll start into design. And when that first script is done with design, it's going into storyboard. When the second script is out of design, that goes into storyboard. And when storyboard gets done, it goes to editorial. And so you're overlapping. So right now we're working on Mouse Clubhouse, and I've got a group of shows I'm working on, and most of them, I think about 10 of them, are all in various stages of production, 10 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I was sitting here thinking of one at a time.
It would be nice, but really, you can't really do it that way because it takes so long to make one. You sort of get it all done and then get it animated and that sort of thing. But these shows are all kind of rolling along. They kind of ramp up and ramp back down.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, we were also wondering how you feel about the decline of DTV movies, particularly of the animated ones.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a question really for you guys. I mean, what do you think about it? Do you think that is the perception that it kind of sucks because they're direct to videos and little brother, here we go, or is it hey, we really need these things and they really carried on whatever they were following the feature film?
Yeah.
What's your thought about it?
Well,
I think it's kind of almost a double-edged sword. I mean, yes, a lot of people have a misconception that if something is direct to video, it's not as good. As say a more higher budget movie, but I think with DTVs, I think it's also like a doorway for small productions to kind of get their work out and then possibly make some more money to move on to bigger and bigger projects. So I think it's unfortunate that the whole decline that's happening right now with them just because of that gateway. I can open it up for some people.
Yeah, I think Rusty pretty much said it exactly right.
No, that's an excellent observation. I think a lot of people out here feel the same way. That sometimes they're chasing dollars because the feature film made a ton of money, so they just go, well, we'll just make a sequel. And then other times it's exactly what you said. It's an opportunity to try to tell a good story, and you don't. And when you don't have $100 million or whatever it has to make. Yeah, no, it's totally true. Professional level at all. I mean, I'm really excited. I just love the idea that fans are so interested in it after all these years. And I still want to see it happen. I want to see it happen, too. I would love to do it. I'd love to do it in CG, really, to do a Balto. Not 3D, but one in CG Balto.
That'd actually be really interesting. And I think that's one of the things I actually haven't heard a lot of people talking about. But I think it'd be really interesting to do that, too. I know I'm blaspheming according to a couple people on the site right now.
Yeah.
But CG is definitely a newer media that is opening up, and a lot of people have shown interest in it. And I think it'd be a good idea.
Did you guys see the, what's it called? I saw the trailer, and I thought, oh, it looks like Balto 4.
Oh, Alpha and Omega?
What was it called?
Alpha and Omega.
Alpha and Omega, right. Alpha and Omega. I saw that, and I didn't see the movie, but I saw the trailer, and there were some things in the trailer. I was like, wow, that's just like, it had a lot of elements, at least in the trailer, that look kind of balsa-like to me. Was there a talking goose?
I haven't seen it, but... Oh, there were? Was?
Oh, yeah. there was a few.
I thought that was kind of funny. I'm kind of curious. I'll have to check it out. But, you know, somebody got out there and told another Wolf in the Wild story.
let's see. One of the users wanted to know about Alu's attitude, and they noticed that she was very childish in the beginning of the movie. Everything. They were wondering what was the purpose was for that. Why she was so childish and why she suddenly wasn't more so towards the end, I guess that's the best way to put it.
I haven't watched it in a long time, but I'm guessing what they're responding to is probably wanted to see more of her maturity through her journey out into the wild. I think that's what the writer was trying to set up, that she kind of was getting wiser with Maru and then with the wolves out there. And maybe they didn't feel that. Maybe they didn't quite sense it. Maybe that's why the reaction was, oh, she's being childish, and now she's, you know, and that could be a valid question. I'd have to watch it again to see if I felt that way.
Okay.
You know, at the time, it seemed like it all worked, but it's been a while.
Yeah, I understand. All right, well, that's actually a really good answer, and I will have to make sure I go beat on their door so they listen to this and hear it.
Okay. Any idea about Blu-ray editions of any of the films that you've worked on?
Well, that's awesome. I don't know. Yeah, that would be really cool. You know, the outputs on Hellboy were digital, but you can go back to Balto 2, and it was probably still on film at that point. It would have to be rescanned to be out as a Blu-ray. Balto 3, I can't remember if we got all digital files or if it came back on film. So, I don't know that they would do it, but if they decided to, there's that sort of technical, how do we up-res this stuff so it looks good on Blu-ray.
Okay.
All right.
And then one person did you want to ask something, Rusty?
Oh, no.
Okay. I was going to say, one person heard that Steel was supposed to be in Balto 3. I'm not sure exactly where they got that information either. But
it was from a previous interview that he had with Steve or someone. It's on the forums.
Okay.
So.
Alrighty. And they were wondering, what made you change your mind?
Actually, the it wasn't in the script, and I pitched it to the executives.
Okay.
It was never written there. My thought was, here they are. I'm just going to repeat the same thing probably already on the forums, but so Balto said, this pilot has crashed. I'm pretty sure this guy has crashed, and I'm going to go after him. I'm going to find him. And nobody wants to go, right? They're like, forget you, pal. You're on your own. This guy's taking our jobs away. We don't want to have anything to do with it. And Balto is going to do the right thing, right? He's going to go out there.
Yeah.
And I thought, how cool would it be at that point in the movie to have Steel step forward and say, I'll go.
Oh, wow.
And now you have this kind of weird, anybody that follows the storyline, you go, wow. And this guy says, and his reason is, goes, you know, I need to, he basically needs to improve the image. You know, he says, I'm going to, you know, we all need to, I can't remember the wording I used, but he needs to sort of prove that he can be helpful in a way.
Okay, yeah.
But you know, the audience, when they go off into the wild, that you know this guy's going to betray Balto, because also the first thing that Steve would want to do is get that guy out alone and get rid of him for once and for all, for ruining his life.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, how cool would that be to have the two of them go out to look for the pilot? And you would really be on edge the whole time. You just don't know, is he honest or is he scheming?
Yeah.
And so that was what I expected. They didn't go for it. It was pretty late in the production.
In your mind, if Steele had gone with Balto, would it have been genuine, or would he have really wanted to get rid of Balto?
In my version of it, I wanted him to really get rid of him. He was like, now I got out here. You ruined my life. You ruined me forever. And you don't have your buddies around this time. And it's over. And that's when Cody was going to come back and save his dad. That was the point.
There needs to be a director's cut of Balto 3 now.
That would have brought Cody back out. And instead, so when Cody saved his dad at the avalanche on the cliff, so Steele's for once and for all is, done. Cody's made up his dad, and then they find the pilot.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for getting on and doing this interview with us. We can't tell you how much we loved it.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad to be part of it. Thanks for inviting me. I think it's really cool that you guys are all over the country.
Thanks a whole lot for this interview.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. All right.